This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last week, we saw Edie back at school and Ruby back at work, but Ruby remains troubled. She knows Lou Watkins is somewhere in town watching for a sight of Edie. With the date set for her registry office wedding to Douglas, Ruby decides to invite Madame.
On Friday afternoon, Edie fidgeted with impatience until it was time to put the covers on their trays at the end of the day. In Muriel the Vauxhall, she insisted on sitting in the front between Janice and Ruby, gripping the front dashboard shelf to see where they were going, and wriggling with excitement as Janice pulled up outside the shoe shop. As soon as they got out of the car, Edie ventured into the shop, looking at the array of footwear displayed on stands, and sat on a footstool to examine the steel foot-measuring contraption, while Ruby and Janice watched her from the shop doorway. Ruby turned to Janice, whispering, "Have you ever thought about killing anyone?" Janice laughed. "You are a funny one. I've often wanted to kill Beryl. I threw an apple at her once. Hit her in the head. You?" Ruby looked at Janice's open face near hers. "Sometimes I have, yes." "Who? Who dare needle you so much you'd murder them?" Janice nudged her with her elbow. Pretending to laugh wasn't a strain.
"Come on, Mum."
Edie tugged at Ruby's sleeve.
"I've found the ones I want."
"Never mind what you want," said Ruby. "You have to get your feet measured first." Seeing the delight between Janice and Edie as they walked ahead hand in hand like chums through the Friday night crowd niggled Ruby. It was silly to be jealous, seeing Edie bounce along with the shoebox under her free arm and her new black shoes on her feet. This was the first time Edie had been Friday night shopping, and Ruby had wanted to be the only one sharing it with her. Worry over the likelihood of Lou Watkins seeing them overshadowed every step she took. She hung back behind Janice and Edie, vicariously snatching at their pleasure, alert for a sign of him lurking among the people in the street. It would almost be a relief to catch sight of him watching for Edie, the way a cat waits in long grass for a bird. There was a policeman on the other side of the road, chatting with people, smiling, then plodding on. Could she bring herself to trust the police down here? What would she say to a policeman if she did see Lou? That she saw a man watching them? Lou could melt into the background, and they'd see her as a mentally disordered woman with hysterical delusions and cart her off to an asylum. "You watch yourself, young lady," had been her mother's frequent injunction. Yes, she'd better watch herself. Neon signs illuminated the crowd of shoppers, all dressed up to impress one another. Plenty of people were there window shopping and pretending not to be gawping at everyone else. Families out together, young shopgirls flaunting and keeping an eye out for boys, and young men, their hair oiled and swished back, having an eye for the girls. Edie turned to stare at a passing lady wearing a fox fur with its dead legs dangling over the front of her coat. A mother in a rough coat and a cheap hat made a spectacle of herself, lifting her wailing infant off the ground by his arm, giving the poor boy's legs a walloping for being a pest. Edie clung to Janice's hand and cast Ruby a look over her shoulder. For a moment, Ruby thought she saw him, standing at the curb, looking up and down the street, hunting. Janice and Edie went ahead, looking in at shop windows. Edie was screened by other window shoppers. Ruby watched from a doorway. Was that really Lou Watkins, with his hand cupped around the stub of a cigarette, flicking it to the gutter? That was his habit of shrugging one shoulder, his nose twisting as he sniffed before walking on. Then he was gone. Had he been there at all? Her nerves were getting the better of her, and everything seemed scrambled.
Oh, hello. Remember me?
The cherry-lipped girl shrieked a friendly greeting.
How did you get on finding a job in the end?
I'm fixed, thanks. Ruby watched Edie and Janice over the girl's shoulder. Look, I'm sorry, I can't stop.
Oh, our church is having a social. If you'd...
Ruby couldn't see Janice. Sorry, I can't... She strode, swerving and elbowing people along the pavement. When she caught up with Janice and Edie, she forced herself to pretend to be enjoying herself. In and out of shops, looking, touching, watching Janice buy little things. Every pore of Ruby's skin became a radar, anticipating and dreading the grip of a hand.
Gotcha.
With Janice, she tested lipsticks on her hand, comparing shades. Edie called her to get sprayed with samples of scent. They compared fragrances of cakes of French soap and flowery wrappers. Ruby bought one for Janice and one for herself. Janice bought Edie a pair of socks and a roll of elastoplast with gauze in it, in case the new shoes gave Edie blisters, and she refused to be dissuaded from buying her woolen mittens that clashed with Edie's coat. You're spoiling her. Ruby made an effort to get into the spirit. Edie could do with a pair of slippers. Let's pop into the shoe shop, just to have a look, mind, before we go home.
Slippers with red pom-poms, said Edie.
Why don't we go across to Roscoe's, said Janice. Has Edie been there? Frank and Douglas are expecting me to cook.
Oh, come on, Janice chimed. There's time to duck in.
Roscoe's! Roscoe's!
Edie chanted. Edie? Ruby snapped. You're carrying on like a spoilt madam, and I won't have it. Let's not go, Janice. Janice looked admonished.
Blame me. I was egging her on.
Sorry, Ruby said. I'm suddenly tired. Let's go home. Home to Frank's house, to feel safe.
Aren't we getting fish and chips from the fish shop?
Edie whined. Not tonight, said Ruby.
No point going near a fish shop after the 6 o'clock swill anyway, said Janice.
Oh, I know what that means,
Edie piped up. Douglas said he'd get some smoked fish for tea, said Ruby. I only hope he remembers. Smoked fish all right with you, Janice?
Lovely.
Janice turned to Edie.
Where did I leave Muriel?
There's a car following us.
Edie was kneeling on the back seat, watching traffic behind them, as they drove over the railway line and headed into Church Street. Ruby didn't need that. Fear crept up her spine. Nonsense, she said. They turned left and then right again, down one of the avenues.
It's still there,
said Edie.
It is following us, and it turned the same corner.
Hello, I think she's right.
Janice was still looking in the rear vision mirror. There is someone behind us.
Janice, watch the road, Ruby said. And don't encourage her to be silly. Edie, I told you to sit down.
Nevertheless, she couldn't resist craning her neck to look behind them.
The other car was surprisingly close.
I think it's a taxi, said Edie. It looks like one. It's black and shiny. It's been behind us since we left the shops.
I think you might be right, said Janice.
Someone down our street phoned for a cab, that's all.
Ruby wanted to sound dismissive.
Why would anybody want to follow Janice?
Oh, ta very much. Do you mean a tall, handsome stranger isn't following me because of love at first sight? It might be the shoe shop man. He was rather charming.
No, the driver was old, cried Edie. His neck was wrinkly. The other chap's a man, though,
Edie reported.
I can tell because of his hat.
Ruby pressed her knuckles against her mouth, trying to contain her panic.
Edie, cut it out.
Fair go, Ruby, admonished Janice, her lips pursed as she adjusted the rear vision mirror. In their pleasant avenue, streetlights made a mystery of the leaf-stripped branches of young trees. Shrubbery became shadowy shapes, and the windows of houses were yellow squares of warm light.
That car's still behind us, Janice said, consulting the rear vision mirror again.
Oh, it's like something in a film. You know the sort of thing. The detective. Or was it the gangster? Oh, you must know. A man leaps into a cab and says, "Cabbie, follow that car."
Edie giggled at Janice's attempt to mimic a gruff American.
Ruby shut her eyes, breathed.
Nothing dramatic like that happens in real life, Janice said.
Be a lark, though, wouldn't it?
No, it wouldn't, Ruby muttered. Janice opened her window to put out her arm, signalling that she was slowing to pull into the curb. The air was heavy with the smell of burning coal and wood smoke. People were warming themselves, safe and settled in for the evening. As the other car slowly passed them, Janice strained to look past Ruby's window.
Edie, sit right back, Ruby commanded.
The street lamp flickered faintly on the shadowy figures.
It is a cab, said Janice, giving the driver a wave.
Don't! Ruby reached across for Janice's arm.
That's old Mr. Gibbons' cab, the De Soto. I know him.
Ruby had sunk her teeth into her wrist, stifling the urge to vomit. She had seen the passenger, craning his neck to get a look at them.
Him. I wonder who that rude bloke was, getting a gawk at us, said Janice.
Some oddball, I suppose, Ruby forced herself to say.
Don't forget your shoebox, said Janice.
Look, said Edie. They're stopping just down there, outside someone's house.
Ruby held the car door open.
It's none of your business, she said to Edie. Out you get, and get into the house, quick.
Edie stood on the berm, gawping.
They're turning around now.
The fear and horror that had been fermenting inside Ruby roiled up all at once, and before she could catch herself, she cuffed Edie, sending her stumbling against the car.
Do as you're told. Get in the house.
Janice's mouth dropped open.
Ruby, I can't make you out. I know you love her to bits, but clipping the kid that way? What for?
Ruby blinked, stunned by what she'd done. It was impossible to excuse herself or explain.
Take care, hun.
Janice put her scarred hand on Ruby's arm.
Edie's a lovely kid. The world's harsh enough.
Never a truer word. Edie stood, glowering, tearlessly rubbing her head. The taxi crawled past them. With their argy-bargy on the berm, the passenger would have had another good look. Lou now knew where to find them.
Come on, you two.
Janice took Edie's hand and put her arm around Ruby. too stupefied to move, Ruby watched them walk ahead, then followed them. At the side of the house, they heard singing. Janice turned to Ruby, her eyes wide. "Is that them?" She took Edie's hand and twirled her into a few dance steps in the half-light from the window, the clout forgotten.
"They sound like professionals, just like on the radio. Oh, I love it."
Janice began singing a line of accompaniment to My Blue Heaven in a wavering voice.
"Hell," Ruby muttered. "It was a mad nightmare."
Edie pushed into the kitchen as soon as the door handle was turned.
"Frank! Frank! Uncle Douglas, look at my shoes! And I've got a pair of warm gloves and a new singlet, and Janice and I had fun all the way home, pretending we were in a film about a car chasing us."
Frank greeted them wearing an apron, a tea towel over his shoulder.
"Very splendid, aren't they, Dougie?" "Silver buckles, too," said Douglas, a pile of plates in his hands. "Just like Bobby Shafter."
Ruby put her hands over her ears, pretending amusement. "Oh, heck, don't start." It was too late. Edie joined Frank and Douglas singing a few shanty lines. For once, Janice looked dumbstruck, eyes sparkling amber, her face bright with grinning. Ruby observed it all as through a lens. There they were, all in the kitchen, the fragrance of smoked fish with pepper in a creamy sauce, and the earthy smell of potatoes baked in their jackets, and the cut green smell of freshly chopped parsley, filling the room. Janice, oddly silent, was like an amused and bewildered child. Edie sang ditties and swiveled her ankles, showing off her shoes. Frank, in his mother's floral apron, was full of charm, with his eyes laughing, while Douglas set dinner things out in the dining room instead of at the kitchen table. Cut glass champagne glasses were brought out.
"Table napkins somewhere," Frank was saying. "Might as well go all out."
"Champagne glasses?" said Ruby, lamely. Somehow her coat must have made its way to the bedroom. She wasn't wearing it, and she didn't recall taking it off or even leaving the room.
"What else does one drink champagne from?"
Frank's eyebrow arched.
"Ruby, show Janice to the table. Go on, Tink, wash your hands. Dougie, help me with this."
"All this looks wonderful."
Janice slid onto a chair.
"Special occasion?"
"Is it?" Ruby looked from the two candlesticks in the centre of the table to Frank and Douglas. They both seemed pleased with themselves.
"I'm sorry I was late after saying I'd cook."
"Nonsense," said Frank. "As soon as I heard about the smoked fish, I got positively inspired. It's ages since I did a turn in the kitchen. Did me good. Dougie helped." "Shall we start?"
said Douglas, putting the last full plate on the table and using his cigarette lighter on the candles.
"Or do you say grace, Janice?"
"No, it's all right."
"Right then," Frank grinned. "Let's say buon appetito, as they do somewhere or another." "Hang on," cried Douglas, rushing to the kitchen and returning with the bottle. "The champagne."
"Give it here," directed Frank.
He wrestled with the wire and used his thumbs to ease the cork. A gunshot sound. And he paled.
"You pour, Douglas. Will you?"
"I'm having some, aren't I, Mum?"
Edie said, aglow with excitement. Ruby and Douglas answered simultaneously.
"No." "You're having fizz, dear," said Douglas. "But when it's in this glass, it will look just the same."
"It's in the fridge," Ruby said, getting up. When she returned with the bottle of creaming soda, she found Janice was giggling over some comment of Frank's, Douglas filling glasses and Edie with her chin on the table, watching each measure. Ruby wanted to freeze the moment and lock it in her memory forever. Frank raised his glass.
Janice, you mustn't expect to dine in this sort of splendour next time you come to tea, but tonight there is something worth celebrating.
Ruby held her breath. She should have taken the opportunity to tell Janice earlier.
Well, me too. Douglas looked coy. Douglas has finally agreed to move in.
Frank lifted his glass higher and added, with circumspection,
as my new boarder.
Goody, goody!
Edie lifted her fizz.
Oh!
Janice raised her own glass, looking slightly puzzled. She looked at Ruby. When? It was all Ruby could say.
Soon, I hope.
Douglas gave her a sidelong look and touched the glass of champagne to his lips.
It rather depends on you, Ruby. Didn't you say next Wednesday?
Janice looked from one to the other again.
Dig in. Food's getting cold.
Frank was in command. Ruby couldn't tell what Janice thought. The merriment had gone off key. Bloody Frank. She could kick him. Janice, I was going to tell you.
They're not getting properly married,
Edie blurted gleefully.
They're going to a registry office so Uncle Douglas can come and live with us.
Janice's brow flickered, then she grinned. At the end of the evening, Ruby watched Janice walk up the path to Muriel. What was between them seemed to spool out like a fishing line hooked in Ruby's heart. And she felt strangely bereft.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.